It's 6 after 9 on this Tuesday morning. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. As the state of Wisconsin struggles to balance the books during hard economic times, some lawmakers are taking a hard look at corporate tax loopholes that cost the state an estimated $100 million a year, according to at least one source. One expert who gave testimony to a Senate committee looking into the fairness of Wisconsin's tax system used the word antiquated when discussing how we collect taxes here in the Badger State. Walmart, for example, was paying rent to itself for buildings it uses in the state and then deducting the rent from its corporate income taxes. And the scheme was perfectly legal. Another loophole allowed businesses to claim their headquarters was in another state, one without corporate income taxes, and avoid paying taxes in Wisconsin altogether. Some loopholes have been closed, but according to my guest this hour, there's still more to be done. Joining me by telephone this morning are Wisconsin State Senator Russ Decker, a Democrat from Schofield, and Michael Mazaroff, Senior Fellow with the State Fiscal Project at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities in Washington, D.C. Good morning, gentlemen, and welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Mazaroff, I want to start with you. Last January, you said that Wisconsin's corporate income tax system was antiquated and flawed. What's wrong with it?
Well, the main thing that's wrong with it is that, like about half the states, Wisconsin's corporate income tax allows a corporation that is made up of a parent company and a bunch of subsidiary companies that are owned by the parent, which is the way most large corporations are organized, to be treated as a series of completely independent companies for tax purposes. And that opens the door to all kinds of games that corporations have figured out to shift income that's actually earned in Wisconsin by a subsidiary that's in Wisconsin onto the books of an out-of-state related company that Wisconsin doesn't have the legal authority to tax. And that is really sort of a fundamental Achilles heel of the Wisconsin corporate income tax.
Well, as I was researching this topic, you think that you've seen all the acronyms there are, and man, there were a whole bunch more that I'd never heard of in this. You've got PICs and REITs and all sorts of other things, and I don't think we'll probably try to explain every one of them this morning, but perhaps before the end of the program we'll be able to explain some of them. Senator Decker, in the most recent budget repair bill, the legislature managed to close a couple of corporate tax loopholes. Which ones were they, and what remains to be done, in your opinion?
Well, what we did in the last budget repair bill is we did the REIT. We closed the REIT, the Real Estate Investment Trust Fund, which allows businesses to deduct their own buildings and take that deduction when they pay the rent in the buildings. I'll give you an example. Walmart will buy property and then build a store on their property and lease it back to themselves, and they zero out, for most practical reasons, any type of a liability they may have for corporate income taxes. The other one was interest expense deduction, which allows companies to shift income they earn to a subsidiary and then deduct the interest they earned on the royalties. So those two combined loopholes that we plugged was able to generate $15 million to help us close some of the budgetary problems we had.
Okay, so that's two. This group of five corporate tax loopholes has become known as the Las Vegas loophole. What didn't we get done that you wanted to see done in this last session?
Well, I would have liked to have closed the whole thing. In fact, the Senate Democrats passed through the Senate proposal that would have completely eliminated the Las Vegas loophole, just like Minnesota has, and Illinois, and Michigan, and in total, 21 states have closed the Las Vegas loophole to where these corporations set up their headquarters in Nevada, and then they are able to, as Michael said, funnel the money back through their books and zero out their liability or take it down to virtually nothing. In fact, California closed the Las Vegas loophole back in 1937. So, you know, it's a fairness issue as far as Senate Democrats are concerned, is that if a company like Walmart has a store and there's a burglary, and they call the cops will show up. If there's an unfortunate incident where there's a fire and they call the fire department will show up. And they need to put more money back into the kitty to pay their fair share, because a lot of the other businesses that are Wisconsin-owned by Wisconsin citizens don't have that. ability to move their structures around throughout the country when it comes to taxes, and they're paying their fair share. And that's all we're saying by closing the Las Vegas loophole is you're going to pull the same weight as all the other businesses as a fairness issue.
Well, one term that keeps popping up as I go through this material is the term combined reporting. Mr. Mazaroff, how about if you explain that?
Well, combined reporting is a basic approach to corporate income taxation that, as Senator Decker said, until last week, 21 states had enacted, and now as of last week we're at 22 because Massachusetts just put it into law. But it basically is an approach to corporate income taxation that just treats the parent company and all of its subsidiaries as one corporation for tax purposes. And what the states do is they add together the profit of the parent and all the subsidiaries, and then they use a formula to assign a share of that nationwide profit of the company to the particular state for tax purposes. And that formula determines what share of the corporation's profit gets assigned to the state. And it's very comparable to what corporations do for federal tax purposes. They treat their entire U.S. business as one company. So that's all that we're hoping states will do. And it simply eliminates the benefit of shifting the income from a subsidiary that's in Wisconsin to the parent that's in another state, because the parent's income gets added back to the Wisconsin company's income under combined reporting, and then the state taxes a share of it.
Now, this is combined reporting, Senator Decker, is something that Senate Democrats wanted to have included. In fact, I think you've been trying to get this passed for a number of years. If I'm not mistaken, it goes back to 2003 and perhaps even before then. Opponents of combined reporting insist that this would amount to a $100 million per year tax increase on Wisconsin corporations and would be a disincentive for companies to come here or to expand here. Senator Decker, how would you respond to that?
Well, you know, that's the way some people who want to buddy up to Merck Pharmaceuticals or Exxon or Walmart, the big corporations, want to spin it. The fact of the matter is Minnesota has closed that loophole, and Minnesota is economically recognized as number one in the country for growth and number three for per capita income. And they have combined reporting. They're able to reinvest a lot of that money right back into their state. And it's not a tax increase. I say all we're doing is eliminating their tax avoidance. What Senate Democrats wanted to do with that closing the Las Vegas loophole was to take that and invest it in Wisconsin. We wanted to increase financial aid for tech colleges and UW students. We wanted to earmark $5 million to put into technical colleges for welding programs, because we've got a lot of companies in the state that are saying we need to train welders faster. We wanted to put some of that money into child care to ease the burden on middle-income families with that cost. Put more money into renewable energies and technology zones. But the biggest job incentive, I thought, what we did was to put $50 million more into transportation, because every report you see, and the citizens of the state recognize this as well, that our roads, bridges, airports, and harbors need to be kept up. And those would be built by Wisconsin businesses hiring Wisconsin workers. So we thought that was a great way to get the economy going in the state of Wisconsin, because those are companies that treat their workers fairly, that pay family-supporting wages. Even Federal Reserve Secretary Bernanke said, you can do all these tax credits, but the real thing is to invest in the country and put people back to work.
We're talking about the issue of corporate tax loopholes in state tax systems, specifically Wisconsin. I have two guests who have joined me this morning, and you can too. Here's how that works. You can call us toll-free at 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. That's a toll-free number. In Milwaukee, it's 227-2050, 414-227-2050. You can also send an email. The address is talk@wpr.org. And as soon as we start to get some calls, we'll have some questions for our guests from our listeners. I expect the phones will start ringing shortly now that I've given the phone numbers. And just in case you missed the beginning of the program, here's who is on the air with me right now. We have Wisconsin State Senator Russ Decker, a Democrat from Schofield, and Michael Mazaroff, senior fellow with the State Fiscal Project at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities in Washington, D.C. Mr. Mazaroff, I want to go back to you next. Senator Decker referred to the fact that that Minnesota has is now one of the states that has closed this this corporate tax loophole, and they're doing pretty well. How are other states faring that have combined reporting? I mean, the boogeyman that's brought up, and I mentioned it earlier, is that if you go to this, you will effectively be increasing the taxes on companies who do business in your state, and therefore you'll be putting a disincentive in front of them for further development in your state. And, for example, let's look at maybe even manufacturing and so forth. How have the states fared so far that have instituted combined reporting as far as their tax collections are concerned?
Well, the states that have had combined reporting in effect, and most of them have had it in effect for decades, are among the most economically successful states in the country. If you go back, for example, to 1990, we all know that manufacturing is doing not so well in the United States, but there are 8 states that have managed to actually have positive growth in manufacturing jobs since 1990, and 7 of those 8 states are combined reporting states. And for most of this period, there were only, about 15 or 16 states that had combined reporting, and 7 of them managed to be among the 8 states that actually had positive manufacturing job growth. So I think that's pretty compelling evidence that combined reporting doesn't hurt state economies. Anyone will tell you that California is the state that pioneered combined reporting, that's had it in effect the longest, that enforces it most systematically. And, the fact that California had combined reporting, in effect, didn't stop all the companies that we now know as Silicon Valley from choosing to start up and build their businesses in California. So I think that's another good indication that corporations will complain about combined reporting and they'll threaten to pull jobs if states adopt it. But the reality is that doesn't happen, and the states that have combined reporting have done very, very well.
Senator Decker, just to clarify, if we went to combined reporting, this would affect primarily those corporations who have who are multi-level and they have subsidiaries and they have stores all over the United States or offices all over the United States. If you're a corporation who only does business in Wisconsin, you're headquartered here, and all your business and all your profits are generated here, this isn't going to affect you at all, right?
Not at all. Not at all, John. In fact, in the budget repair bill, we put our economic development package out. We closed the Las Vegas loophole and actually lowered the corporate income tax rate down to 7.8%. That wasn't going to be the home run everybody's looking for, but we wanted to signal that Senate Democrats are willing to treat Wisconsin businesses that are fair corporate citizens in a good way. And just tell the other businesses, as you mentioned, that have these multi-layered capabilities to avoid paying their tax share, that they're going to just come up and pay the same freight as everyone else.
Historically, in Wisconsin, if you measure tax burden in terms of who it falls on, years ago it was a pretty even split between corporations and the average citizen in the state. But that's been changing over time. Senator Decker, tell us how that's been changing.
Well, mainly in property taxes. It used to be that corporations paid 69% of It used to be that homeowners paid 50% of the property tax burden. Now they pay 69%. And now what's happened is the corporations used to pay 19%. Now they're paying 4%. So just in the property tax system alone, there's been a massive shift to residential homeowner properties. And I think that's something that goes along. Plus, there's been a number of tax breaks given to large corporations, whether you like them or not, whether you can argue whether it's economically good or not, that's a fact. And as a result, the personal income taxes generate more and pick up a bigger burden.
Of course, the argument there is if we have someone come in who creates a whole bunch of jobs, those are going to be people who are paying state income tax, and either whether they're renting or buying a home, they're going to be contributing to our property tax base in some way, and so it should all even out. Has that, in fact, been what's happened?
Well, actually, no. People can make that argument that if we reduce corporate income tax rates, that there's going to be all this influx of jobs and better-paying jobs. I keep looking at Minnesota. Minnesota in the last 25 years has gotten to be $4,000 per year per person in higher income. And they have a much higher corporate income tax rate, but they have a different way of doing property taxes, so it's actually more appealing for homeowners in Minnesota. And they don't have that strident uniformity clause in the Constitution that restricts us from doing targeted tax relief. So, you know, one, I think, just look at Minnesota, how much better they're doing with the tax structure, with the higher corporate tax rates, and with combined reporting or Las Vegas loophole being closed, whichever one you want to call it. And they're doing very well, and that's good for them. I just think we need to start looking at some of the things they've done and try to bring that success into Wisconsin.
Well, I wouldn't want to own a car there. What they pay in registration fees is pretty stiff.
That's true. They have a higher car registration and a lower gas tax. And even like the thing of repealing the gas indexing several years ago has created a massive hole in transportation. And now we've got more and more bridges that need to be fixed, more airports, more harbors, or more roads. You know, I always talk about Highway 29, John. I grew up on my folks' farm not too far from there. We called it Bloody 29 because so many people got injured and killed. And now since we invested money into that and made it a four-lane highway, traffic is up 70%, but the deaths are down 50%. And on top of that, 5,000 new manufacturing jobs have located along that corridor. So you had a massive infrastructure improvement that had Wisconsin businesses hiring Wisconsin workers, building Wisconsin roads, that economically and safety-wise, I think was a good thing.
Well, it certainly is one of the very few decent east-west highways we have in the state of Wisconsin. We do pretty good north and south, but not so hot east and west as I've been traveling around the state. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we've got some callers who want to join us, and you could be one of them. We have a line or two that's still open if you'd like to call right now at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Or 227-2050 if you're calling us from Milwaukee, 227-2050. The email address is talk@wpr.org. We're talking about the whole issue of corporate tax loopholes in the state of Wisconsin and nationally. We've got a couple of guests on the line who can answer your questions, both about Wisconsin's tax system and how other states are handling similar situations and how that's worked there. It's all fair game. Here on the Ideas Network, I'm John Munson, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn today. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 25 after 9. Here's what's coming up later on the Ideas Network. Tornadoes, earthquakes, fires. No one expects a disaster to happen to them, but when they do occur, who tends to survive and why? After 5 on At Issue, Ben Marins and his guests discuss how factors such as luck and intelligence play a role in disaster survival. That's coming up after 5 o'clock today here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about taxes, specifically corporate taxes. And given the recent struggles our state has had to balance its budget, lawmakers are examining ways to increase revenue, and one of them would be to close some corporate tax loopholes that exist in Wisconsin's tax structure. And to help us figure out what it is we would like to do, or some of us at least would like to do, and how that would all work, I have two guests joining me by phone this morning. First of all, we have Wisconsin State Senator Russ Decker, a Democrat from Schofield, and Michael Mazaroff, a senior fellow with the State Fiscal Project at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities in Washington, D.C. We're going to go to the phones, and first we'll take a call from Andrew in Avery. Andrew, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, and thank you for having me. I have two questions, and question number one, the most important question I have, is what are the top 5 or top 10 corporations in Wisconsin that this, if this would go through, that this would affect, or basically the top 5 or top 10 that have to pay up, we could say? And then my other question is, as a Wisconsin citizen, what can I do to help our legislation, our government, push this through? And I'll take your answers off the air.
Okay, so do we have a top 5 corporations who this would affect? Senator Decker, I think this will be to you.
I can. I don't have them rated. I got some put together here. I can give you a couple of examples of some ones that made a lot of money. Microsoft, the last numbers we had, made $7.5 billion. Which is a good thing to make money. I mean, corporations have to have profits to
well, that's what they're there for.
To exist, but they paid zero state income tax. I'm looking at another one here. Kimberly-Clark made $1.7 billion and paid zero. Merck Pharmaceuticals made 6.8. Merck Pharmaceuticals made $6.8 billion and paid zero Wisconsin corporate income taxes. So there's a number of them. PepsiCo is another one. Made $3.6 billion as a corporation, paid zero Wisconsin state income taxes. And what the caller said, what can you do to help? Just talk about these things. I mean, a lot of the businesses on Main Street right now are struggling, or some of the manufacturings or in different sectors are saying, you know, we're hurting. It's saying, yeah, you know, everybody's hurting a little bit here, but some of these folks aren't pulling their fair share.
Mr. Mazaroff, I wanted to specifically talk to you about one thing. In fact, this was actually my discovery that these things even existed was one of the things that led to a discussion about whether we should even do this topic, and that is real estate investment trusts. That was one thing that the Wisconsin legislature did address in the budget repair bill, but I would like you to explain what those are and how common they are now.
Well, originally, real estate investment trusts were set up under federal law for a very good purpose, which was to sort of be like a mutual fund for real estate, to allow people, you know, individual investors to invest in a broad portfolio of real estate investments just the way mutual funds allow them to invest in stocks. So that's a very good thing. Nobody objects to REITs at all. But at some point in the last 10 or 15 years, a shrewd accountant or state tax lawyer figured out that companies could set up REITs as wholly owned subsidiaries of the company. They could. There's a requirement under federal law that REITs have to have at least 100 investors. So somebody figured out, well, gee, we could have one investor, the corporation, owned 99.9% of the REIT, and then we could give out 99 shares of non-voting stock to senior executives who we know will vote the way we want them to. Well, they won't vote. They don't have to vote. They just have one share. And so all of a sudden they've satisfied this 100 shareholder requirement for a REIT, and then they figured out, well, gee, now that we know REITs are exempt under federal law, we can set up a REIT that's a wholly owned subsidiary and then do what Senator Decker described, which is transfer our stores to the REIT, pay tax-deductible rent to the REIT. That lowers the tax of Walmart in Wisconsin, and the REIT isn't taxable because it's a tax-exempt entity. And lo and behold, you create massive amounts of profit that don't get taxed anywhere. So it has turned into, you know, something that was set up for a good reason has now been turned into a corporate tax shelter.
In Wisconsin, Senator Decker, we have pretty much closed that particular loophole. There are, what's referred to in the legislation, or at least in the material I saw from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, what we have is we have qualified real estate investment trusts. Would you explain, please, how those are different from the real estate investment trusts that Mr. Mazaroff was just describing?
John, that's something I got to look at, to be quite frank, because I don't want to give an answer. The qualified real estate investment trust is slightly different. Maybe Mike could help us out on that.
Well, I mean, my understanding of it is that it's just allowing REITs that are set up for legitimate purposes to be, to continue to have that status. And sometimes REITs are partially owned by corporations, and that's fine as long as they're also widely held by individual investors, and the corporation doesn't control the REIT in such a way that it can be used as a illegitimate tax shelter.
I think in Wisconsin that now means a qualified real estate investment trust would mean that no more than 50% of the control of that trust would rest with one corporation or its sub-organizations, I think. And again, it's pretty complicated. I don't want to get too far into this because we've got callers waiting to get in on this program, and I want to get to them as well. Let's see. Let's go to Dick in Kohler next. Dick, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to know why Wisconsin financial institutions are permitted to form subsidiaries to hold their investment portfolios, say government or municipal bonds. And because those subsidiaries are located in states like Nevada, a bank can avoid anywhere from 15 to maybe 50% of their entire income from state taxation.
Well, let me respond, which is to say, I mean, I think banks should be allowed to, and any corporation should be allowed to structure itself in whatever way it thinks it needs to for business purposes. But I think you're quite right that how that structure translates into their tax liability is another thing entirely. And if they're earning income in Wisconsin, they should not be allowed to structure themselves in a way that avoids their ability to their requirement to pay their fair share of tax. And so that's what combined reporting would do. It would say you form all the subsidiaries you want anywhere for legitimate business purposes, but we're not going to allow that to determine your tax liability. Your tax liability is going to be determined by the level of business you're doing in Wisconsin.
Dick, thanks for that call. Senator Decker, did you want to respond to that as well?
Actually, when Dick was calling, he must have been on a cell phone. I couldn't hear half of what he was saying, so I think Mike must have picked it up pretty well.
Well, he was asking about why we allow financial institutions to form subsidiaries and avoid paying taxes on. So I think what he was talking about, if I understood him right, and Mr. Mazuroff, you can correct me if I'm wrong, was passive investment companies. That's been a strategy that's been used for years, which is why there are so many hundreds and hundreds of companies that are registered in Delaware and places like that.
Well, you know, combined reporting would get a lot of the banks. I mean, M&I Bank has made very, very good money for a number of years. Lately, it's been a little bit down, but they were able to take advantage of the Las Vegas loophole as well because they set up their corporate headquarters in Las Vegas. And so those are the type of things we want to go after. Now, I give the Doyle administration some credit. They basically said, you're going to pay a fair share of what your operations are in Wisconsin. And they made some settlements with a number of banks, and I still think they're negotiating. We just don't know what the final numbers are or who paid what. But there are some efforts going on.
There's actually a complaint filed, and there's some sort of legal action ongoing with some companies in Wisconsin over tax issues.
Are you talking the recent one on the computer software?
That would have been one of them. Yeah, I think there might have been some others too. But
yeah, the Manasseh Corporation has been around. If I remember my numbers correctly, 1987 under the Thompson administration, they said that the sales tax applies to corporation soft computer software, and that went through a whole series of tax appeals commission, through circuit court, through appellate court, and the Supreme Court. Now, Supreme Court ruled for the Manasseh Corporation, but there's other companies that are very similar are going to be making the same claim. So those are things that we have to do. But we did close a major loophole. Representative Crawford and Senator Hansen from Green Bay pushed through what was called a Newark bill, where someone found a loophole in the 1953 law, said that if you do any kind of recycling, you're exempt from paying property taxes on that equipment. Well, that was a stretch, and we passed a bill last summer that the governor signed blocking that loophole. So it's a never-ending battle going on because some of these corporations are able to hire some very, very intelligent and savvy tax attorneys that are finding ways through this. And your regular small business person has to have his nose to the grindstone watching the bottom line every day, doesn't have the same capacity.
Let's take a call from Dennis in Madison next. Dennis, go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. Good morning. You were just starting to touch on it, or one of the guests was. Would you explain what a tax loophole is as compared to a tax law? I thought all of what was going on here is legal, and these laws were passed by you, the legislators. Am I mistaken, or do corporations write their own tax laws?
No, actually, what these corporations are doing is legal. Many times the courts make an interpretation, like the Manasseh was done by the court's interpretation. When machinery and equipment exemption was passed in the late 70s, line A items were also added to it by the court. So they're not even doing anything legal. We're just simply saying they found a way to finagle through by setting up their corporate headquarters in states that don't have corporate income taxes like Nevada or Connecticut. And the other corporations in Wisconsin that don't have that capacity are paying a higher freight than these big corporations who can afford to pay more.
Well, and we should stipulate that these quote-unquote corporate headquarters are generally a post office box or an address, or there may be hundreds of corporations in that occupy one postal space. So we're not talking about headquarters in terms of massive buildings and thousands of employees someplace.
I mean, not every shortcoming of the state corporate income tax is a loophole, but there certainly are loopholes, which I define as sort of an opportunity for tax avoidance that no one could think was really intended. And I think the captive REIT is a good example of that. I mean, the captive REIT is possible in most places because states only enacted sort of half of the provisions that are in federal law to ensure that even though the REIT isn't taxable, the REIT shareholders are taxable on the REIT's income. And that's in federal law, but a lot of states didn't enact the second half of that, and that's what created the opportunity for corporations to set up captive REITs. So clearly, there are tax shelters that involve sophisticated tax planning, but there are others like the captive REIT that really just take advantage of what was probably an unintended oversight by legislators.
Well, and let's be fair to corporations here. I mean, when I do my personal income tax every year, I look for every deduction that I can find so that I don't pay any more taxes than I have to. Nobody, no corporation would say, I wonder how we could increase our share of state corporate income taxes this year. That CEO or CFO would get fired pretty quickly. The shareholders wouldn't stand for it. I mean, so there's nothing inherently wrong about avoiding a tax obligation through legal means. I mean, that's why you pay accountants and tax lawyers, is to find every legal deduction that you can take so that you minimize your liability to taxes and increase the profit of your company. So, I mean, I guess to be fair, we have to kind of stipulate that, don't we?
Well, I think you're right, John. We're not accusing these people of doing anything illegal. And as Mike pointed out, what loopholes he defined it, I think, is pretty decent, saying that someone has learned a legal way around something that was unintended consequence, and many times done by the courts, who just simply will say yes or no whether or not they agree, and all of a sudden you have another loophole. We're just simply saying that this has gotten more and more sophisticated by the larger corporations at an advantage to the other ones. Now, why should Walmart, in a community wherever it's located, get away with paying virtually nothing in corporate income taxes when a locally owned competitor of theirs in the same community or within the same region pays the full freight? So it's an economic leg up simply because they have the sophistication of tax attorneys to manipulate the tax code to their advantage. It's totally legal. I agree with that, John. But these other companies who are solely based in Wisconsin don't have that flexibility, and they're at an economic disadvantage.
We have some emails that we need to get to here that I just noticed because I happened to look at that screen. Here's an email from Dick, who didn't give a city, but we'll read his email anyway. I've heard that Kohl's is tax-exempt in Wisconsin, also Sears, which includes Kmart and Walmart. Can you confirm that question about these particular corporations?
Well, certainly in the case of Kohl's, there were press reports a number of years ago that Kohl's was engaged in another very common tax shelter called the passive, the royalty investment company, or they have various names, but it involved Kohl's transferring its trademark to a subsidiary probably located in Delaware or Nevada, and then paying a royalty for the use of that trademark to that subsidiary. Wisconsin allowed that royalty to be deducted for Wisconsin as a deductible expense for Wisconsin corporate income tax purposes, and so that had the effect of substantially reducing and perhaps even eliminating Kohl's tax liability in Wisconsin. And the last press report I saw seemed to indicate that the state had settled the case with Kohl's, and we don't know what the terms of that settlement were, but we do know, at least know, they were engaged in that tax shelter. I'm not aware of Sears having done the same thing, but it is definitely true that Kmart was involved in the same tax shelter, and it's an extremely common tax shelter, and it is one that unfortunately Wisconsin has only partially closed. As Senator Decker said before, as one of the two things that was done in the last session was, in addition to the dealing with the captive REIT, was disallowing deductions for interest payments paid to passive investment companies, but the deduction for royalties to passive investment companies is still allowed, and so the state is losing revenue from having so far failed to close that loophole.
Well, here's another email from, and Senator Decker, here's one from one of your constituents, I'm pretty sure. This is Diana from Plover, who says, given Senator Decker's strong record as an advocate for public education in the state, I am hopeful that he could speak to the tax loopholes you're discussing in relation to the ability of local school districts to fairly tax business entities located within their district boundaries.
Okay, John. Actually, Diana, being from Plover, is Senator Loss's area. So
okay,
just south,
well,
just
my,
south of
my I missed where the line was there for the
not
district.
Not a problem. Not, although I get down there quite a bit. So, but what she's basically saying is that because of the corporate loopholes, that the school districts are not able to do a property tax assessment. That is somewhat true in some areas. The Newark decision I said earlier, we plug that one. And as these corporations are able to avoid paying their fair share, that means the state has to struggle with state aid that goes into K-12 education or tech colleges or even in higher ed in the university system for student aid. So all those things are just piled back onto the local school board, and they have to end up either looking at cutting something or going to referendum to seek cost control.
And here's another email, and then we're all caught up on those. Here's one from Jeff in Crawford County, who says, instead of closing loopholes, could the state impose a simple two-step process that requires every entity doing business in Wisconsin to report its gross income from all sources from Wisconsin operations and a minimum 6% tax on that gross income without exemption or deduction? So a corporate flat tax, I think, is what he's talking about there.
Well, I think what he's talking about is what would generally be called a gross receipts tax. And there are a number of states that have gross receipts taxes instead of their corporate income tax. And there is a small mini trend towards states giving that more consideration, so that part of the new Michigan business tax that was passed last year is sort of a modified gross receipts tax, and Ohio did the same thing a couple years ago as well. And the business community is kind of mixed on it. In some states, you know, in Ohio, for example, the business community or major elements of it generally welcomed substituting a gross receipts tax for the corporate income tax. And in Illinois, they were, last year when the governor there proposed it, they were adamantly opposed. So it's kind of, there isn't unanimity nationally among the big business community in terms of how they feel about gross receipts taxes. You know, in general, gross receipts taxes have a big problem, and that is this problem of pyramiding, where, you know, one business sells to another, and they levy a 6% gross receipts tax on that, and then their customer business sells to another business, and another 6% gets levied on the same inputs, and so the tax pyramids, and there's all kinds of bad economic consequences that flow from that, and that's why most economists and most businesses don't like gross receipts taxes. You know, I think the corporate income tax is very fixable, and with some key things like combined reporting, and possibly supplemented with what the caller is suggesting, with a very low rate gross receipts tax to sort of serve as a corporate minimum tax, that would be a good thing to do. But I think the corporate income tax is fixable, and I think it ought to be fixed.
We're going to continue our discussion on the other side of this next break, and we have the phone lines have filled up. Well, we've been taking emails, so that's worked out really well. We've got more callers who want to get in, and we'll take those in just a moment. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn today. It's 9:48. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's what we're going to be talking about next hour. Are we on the verge of another baby boom? A record 4.3 million babies were born in America last year. That's the most since 1957. After 10, I will be talking about the increasing U.S. population and its potential impact on the economy and the environment. Well, one thing, that would be more people to pay taxes. We're talking about taxes this hour, and we have full phone banks, but you can still join us by email. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Let's go to the phones, and we'll talk next to Chris in Burlington.
Hi.
Chris, good morning.
Hi, how you doing? This is a real important topic, and first let me say I am pro-business. And so listening to this is very helpful for me to help get a position on where I stand. I feel that this issue is really crucial for the fiscal health of our state. And originally, knowing the situation, I felt it was somewhat unfeasible. But with the examples that your guests have shown of other states that have been able to do this and still maintain economic growth, has really changed my mind. So I want to thank them for that. And also, even though these laws that are in place are legal, they may not necessarily be fair or equitable. And I'd like to ask the guests if they look at the comparison to sales tax. When a consumer goes in and purchases something from a store that has a presence in this, a corporation that has a presence in the state, you're required to pay sales tax directly to the state. But if they don't have a presence in the state, you may not have to pay sales tax. So that was one of the things I wanted to mention. So,
okay, I don't know which one of our guests would like to respond to that one first, but...
I'll take a shot at it. I mean, certainly in terms of the caller's first comment, yeah, I don't think I've mentioned yet that six states have adopted combined reporting in just the past 4 years. There were 16 states that have had it for decades, but six more states, Vermont, Texas, New York, West Virginia, Michigan, and Massachusetts, have all enacted combined reporting in the past few years. So I think there is a growing recognition of the problems with the kind of loopholes and tax shelters we've been talking about today, and there's a growing comfort on the part of legislators in many states that combined reporting is an important piece of the solution. In terms of the other issue that's being raised about sales taxation and the whole issue of presence, there's a relationship between that one and the one we're talking about, in that the same kind of games that are being played by companies to avoid paying corporate income tax to the state in terms of dividing themselves up into different subsidiaries to avoid paying corporate income tax, companies are doing the exact same thing, unfortunately, to avoid collecting sales tax. So the caller's right, even though if you have a presence in the state, you need to collect sales tax in your store. There are a lot of companies that are setting up their web operation as a separate subsidiary from the store and claiming, though, that even though they have the store in the state, they don't have to collect tax on the internet sales. And that also requires legislative action. I think there are things that states could do, states like Wisconsin could do to deal with that. For example, New York just passed a law to try to compel Amazon to collect tax in New York, sales tax, on a very similar basis.
Yeah,
well,
John,
if I could just go ahead, Senator. Go ahead.
With Chris and down in Burlington, lots of trains and lots of Nestle chocolate down that way. If you've ever been through Burlington, John, you can really smell Nestle's chocolate factory down there. As far as the sales tax, really what Chris is calling about is streamlined sales tax, where we try to say you're going to have to pay on eBay and internet sales and all that because the vendor on Main Street is collecting sales tax and most of the time. And again, it's in a way that the locally owned business has an economic disadvantage to the internet sales that are going on. So I think that's one of the reasons we did pass the streamlined sales tax through the Senate, and Bob Jouk from up on Poplar by Superior has been pushing that issue for a number of years. So we'll continue to look at this whole tax fairness issue and try to balance things out in state.
Well, when you're talking about an internet tax, and you mentioned eBay, a lot of the people who sell on eBay, not all of them, there are some stores on eBay, the regular stores, just like you could go in, walk into with doors and windows and mannequins and everything else. But a lot of what's sold on eBay is sold by individual persons like they would sell at a garage sale. Do we collect sales tax on garage sales?
I think garage sales is the underground market. I think that's all cash, and nobody reports any of it as far as I know.
Okay. And even with the federal legislation that would solve this problem, there's a recognition that you want to exempt really, really small businesses from an obligation to collect sales tax everywhere they have sales. I don't think anybody thinks that a really small business selling on eBay ought to have to collect tax everywhere. But certainly, once you get above a certain size, it becomes feasible to do so. And as Senator Decker said, companies, Main Street stores, are really at a disadvantage if they're starting out with a 6 or 8% price disadvantage relative to their competitors on the Internet, because the local store has to collect sales tax and the Internet seller like Amazon doesn't.
Just to play devil's advocate on that for just a moment, that Main Street person only has one tax rate to deal with. If you're going to sell something on eBay and you're going to open it up, and I'm just using eBay as an example because it's obvious and a lot of people know what it is, but if I have some sort of a store on the web and I'm going to sell in all 50 states and they all have different tax rates, and in fact, sales tax rates can vary from one county to the next, that's going to be an accounting nightmare.
Well, that's part of the reason why, as I said, I think that small businesses should not have that obligation. But it's not that big an accounting nightmare. There's software that does it. Amazon will, if you sell as a small merchant on Amazon, you know, Amazon functions like eBay too, and if you pay an extra fee to Amazon, Amazon will collect the tax for you everywhere. So it's the nightmare is exaggerated. There's software to help deal with it, and as Senator Decker said, the streamlined sales tax project that a lot of states are involved in is primarily aimed at simplifying the whole process.
Let's take a call from Doyle in Saukville.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I know you're probably short on time, so I'll try to be brief. I had a question I wanted to address to Senator Decker. I thought I heard him earlier talking about this increased revenue that would be collected from closing these loopholes, and I thought I heard him talking about new spending, and I think it's no secret in Wisconsin we do have some serious budgeting problems. And it's a little frustrating to know that we haven't even collected this money yet, and we're already talking about new spending. And I was just wondering why we wouldn't address our budget problems first before we even think about new spending. And I just wonder if there's ever a time when the state can finally say, okay, we have enough tax money, we can do what we need to do, or if it's going to – I'm 62 years old, and in my entire lifetime it's always we need more, we need more, we need more. And I think if the people gave all they have to the government, it still wouldn't be enough. They'd be running a deficit. And I think spending, and I'm not against everybody paying their fair share of taxes, but I'm just wondering if we can once say, let's take care of our budget, let's not talk about new spending.
Well, there's a couple of things that are just absolutely sucking the life out of the state treasury as well as everybody else in the high cost of health care. Maybe that's a topic for another day. But the reason we wanted to put additional investment into the state of Wisconsin was to stimulate job growth. And if some of the construction companies in the state that are building our roads and highways and bridges and airports and that have still not called some of their people back to work, and those are good-paying jobs with good health care and retirement benefits that we wanted to try and embrace. And, you know, the tragedy of that bridge falling in Minnesota, I think, woke a lot of people up in the Midwest and in the country, is that we shouldn't have to wait to a tragedy like that to keep our infrastructure up. It's something that has to be maintained anyhow. And as far as renewable energy grants and those type of things, if we don't start getting ahead of the curveball, we're going to be behind the curveball. And we've got to start getting in innovative ways. You know, up in Park Falls now, the biofuels is going to be coming up to where the people at the Park Falls paper mill are going to try and get ways to get the energy costs down by getting away from the current forms of energy we use. So Yeah, I think we still need to invest in those type of things and technology zones. We went through a whole audit of the different types of economic development scenarios we had and programs. And we looked at them and said some of these were not very good, but some are very good. And we tried to look at the technology zones, especially in that Chippewa-Eau Claire area, as a way to invest. So we think one of the things, you got to keep the infrastructure up, because the longer you wait, the more it costs.
Well, that's going to have to be where we leave it. Thank you very, very much, Senator Decker and Mr. Mazeroff, for a very informative hour.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
State Senator Russ Decker is a Democrat from Schofield, and Michael Mazeroff is senior fellow with the State Fiscal Project at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities in Washington, D.C. Jonathan Anderson produced this program and answered the telephones. He's a dual threat. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.